all see the announcement, right, for Tom McKay's talk? That will be Tuesday next week. So remind your students that we need some audience. So give some, you know, credit for attending talk and so on. So, you want to start? See? So this is our the fifth Brownback lunch talk, and this will be the last one for this semester. Mm-hmm. So if any of you like to do the talk next semester, just let me know so we can make arrangements for next semester. Okay. So today, our speaker is Steve, and he's going to talk about Web 2.0, which I know nothing about it.
Yeah.
And he's going to tell us all about it.
Well, not all about it. Generally, the talk falls under the category of concepts which I've discovered have been called Web 2.0. It could have also been subtitled some things I wanted to learn to do last summer, but that doesn't sound like a good title there. So what I was interested in doing is that I had seen some really interesting web applications, and what I wanted to do was to just find out how to do these things myself. And so really that's what I'm going to talk about. But a few weeks ago, around the 1st of October, there was a lot of PR starting to come out about the Web 2.0, and they had this big conference in San Francisco. And since then, the press and stuff like this has really just grown exponentially. In fact, this last weekend, there was a New York Times article, USA Today article about Google Maps and things like that. And so there's been a lot of interest. And since 1st of October, this thing is, some of the ideas have just taken off exponentially. So first I thought, because May said, I don't know anything about Web 2.0, so I thought I'd say a few words about the general idea of what's the shift that people are proposing. The old, in a nutshell here, the old web, original web, was about publishing stuff. You'd make content, you'd publish it on the web, and people would read it, do things with it. The version is to say that we want to make the web more user-centric, more user-friendly. So we would like users to feel more comfortable, and make it feel like they're using their desktop. That's one of the phrases that gets thrown in here sometimes. You'd like users to participate in the web development and things like this. And so this was one of the essays that Tim O'Reilly did just before this conference. This was came out, I think the date on it says something like the 30th of September. If you go and Google what is Web 2.0, you'll find lots and lots of articles. And so basically he tried to draw up a transition here. The new types of things involve user participation types of activities, blogs, wikis, tagging things, and so forth. And also some of the efforts to make items a little more user-friendly. Now, there's another map here that was picked up by USA Today. It sort of shows the interaction between these things, and there is no single technology or technique that's called the Web 2.0. It's just a collection of taking old ideas and putting them together in different ways, perhaps with different purposes and things like this. And so and loosely speaking, the things I'm interested in is somewhere up near one of these little bubbles near the top here, or at least that's what I've been playing around with. In particular, what I wanted to focus on today is something called AJAX, and a second type of application that I wanted to figure out how to do is to set up RSS feeds and podcast. So, and I might have to tell you what they are in case people don't know what they are. All right, so let's take a look at the idea of AJAX. AJAX stands for Asynchronous JavaScript and XML. Actually, XML is behind most of the things here. And the problem that these type of applications were intended to solve is the wait problem. Typically, what it happens is you go to a website and you want to do something, you click, and then you get this little thing and you wait. Because the model is something like this. Here is your page. And when you take your next move or you click on something, what it has to do is to go back to the server and get the new information and send it back. And that takes time. It also makes a load on the server. Now, the idea behind this AJAX is that it's going to take advantage of the time when a person is looking at a page deciding what to do. And so what it's going to do is, in the background, it's going to be loading what the next move is going to be, so that when you make your next choice, it's sort of there. Now, a good example of this is some years ago, Yahoo's map. You'd get this little map, and if you wanted to go just a little, move over a little bit, you'd have little arrows on the sides and the top and the bottom, and you'd click this arrow and you'd have to wait for the new map to load. Well, one of the applications that caught people's eye immediately was an application by Google. And Google Maps, basically what it did, it allows you to put your cursor here and just to move things back and forth. You can immediately move. They've got all of these tiles that have your maps. And so those next tiles have been already loaded. Now, how does it all work? What it works is that you have, of course, your page here. And you've got some data sitting off here in an X, so you have to make up an extra page. You've got some XML file, which is basically just some tagged data. And so what happens is it uses, and JavaScript then ties the page and the XML thing together. What it's doing, it's using a command, which is a function which has been around for a long time, but until about a year or so ago, people weren't really using it, and that's an XML HTTP request, however you spell request. Okay. And so what this does is basically goes off while you're looking at a page and loads in the background data. Now, there are a number of applications of this around. I'm going to show you a few, see how the time goes. While people thought this was really neat, in April of this year, Google did something very interesting. It released its Map API, which is sort of like a little sub-program that really makes this mapping things work. And within days, people had built applications on top of this. The first one, and unfortunately I don't remember who did it, what it did was, so this is a Google map, and it has a lot of things. You can change the view on it here, from the looking at the map to a satellite overview, or you can mix them. You can put different types of zoom in capabilities here on the side. And well, you can read the instructions on this, but what the creator of this did, he'd used the Craigslist which was basically an XML file, and he picked out the part that dealt with housings for sale and things like this. And he took the Craigslist information and mashed it with Google Maps as an overlay and put the two together. And so if you want to focus, if you want to click on something, so these little markers here are the standard default. Okay, now I have to make a choice for rent or sale, whatever. I don't know what. So it zooms in here. Now, you see what's happening. It was, there's little tiles so that to illustrate the mobility of this, you see, if I want to move some way, I don't know anything about Raleigh, but if I, so you see how you can easily move this. You don't have to click something like you used to with Yahoo Maps and wait for the new set of tiles to load. Now, you can zoom in on these things. I don't know anything about Raleigh. You can zoom in. Now, I lost when I zoomed in. Hopefully, I'm going to get some houses there for sale. Now, there's a list over in the right-hand panel. Okay, there's a house down here. So you can click on this little thing. Well, it gives the price and gives information. That's interesting. That must have been, is there some sort of government secret base around in Raleigh? I don't know. Sometimes what happens is they don't let you zoom in and look in real closely. You can get down to the street level here. They don't let you look in on top of things where people shouldn't be looking in on top of, or they think. Anyway, yeah, since I'm doing this randomly here, so you can, if you click on this, it'll probably pull up information. That wasn't very interesting at all. Some of them you would pull up, if I can find those towns. Oh, here's a few. I don't know, here's whatever that is. Okay, see, you get a little, this is just extra JavaScript kind of thing. Basically, there's all this data out here that somebody has put into Craigslist. And so you've got this file, and all it's doing is taking that information and placing it one place or another, placing it in this little pop-up title box. Okay, so that was kind of neat. So I won't go into, first thing I tried to do was just to learn how to make this XML thing work. And my first example was nothing to write home through any, well, in fact, I don't think any of it's to write home about. It was what would a mathematician do? You'd make up a sample quiz, of course. and so you've got the answers sitting off in some Excel file. XML file, and so the whole idea is that I'd like that to communicate and pull up the answers. And then I thought, since these APIs were available, I tried to. I said I'd try my hand at this, and I tried one. The first one worked really easy was to mark all the filling stations in the West Ashley area, and I can click on them and find out what the price of gas is. That's okay. I wanted to do something that used their polylines. Well, there was a hurricane around about that time, Irene. And so, all right, David puts little pins in his little map whenever hurricanes come, and that's kind of nice, but he takes them out after the hurricanes are gone. And I can't remember where they went. So I said, I'll try my hand at this. And so it took a while to figure out. And then, of course, Jose came along. And then that was a challenge because I had to discover some things about this type of request. For example, it can only make one call to the server. So that means you've got to load in all the calls at once. That took me a while because I could only get one hurricane to show, and I couldn't figure out why. And then, of course, I don't know, these hurricanes started to come more frequently. And some of the interesting things about this, you see, with the Google Maps, you can focus down to as close as you want. And in fact, where the hurricanes whichever one this was, crossed over here, you can zoom down to the street level. Now, the National Weather Service map, you can't do that. The data that comes out is like reported every 6 hours. And at first I started to put markers like it for everyone. But then, you had markers all over the place. You couldn't understand anything. So some of them I only kept track of the latest where it was. Other times I said, this one was a funny one. I think this was Ophelia or something like that. I put them up every 24 hours. So now the whole purpose I wanted to mention on this was to indicate some of the things you can do. For example, you can have different. Beta is now dead, but I wanted to point out you can make different size markers. These are smaller than, if you notice, than the size that was on that map for the housing thing. I made these a little smaller. You can change colors. You can change the widths of paths. You can do lots of stuff on that. So this was my effort. I'd like to enhance it a little bit more because there's getting too many of these things. So maybe put down some sort of drop-down list, and so then you can click on one and you can get all the data for that particular hurricane without being confused with all the others. There's even the one over here that attacked Portugal. But notice how nice and smooth the map works.
The bifurcation points. The hurricane didn't split that right there before you got on.
Which one?
The one at the bottom.
This one?
No, the next one. See how it splits?
No. These were different ones. This was something here, and this was the one that won. Or that was the that big one that just
Wilma.
Yeah, that was Wilma one. The idea is that I'm not trying to take the job of the National Weather Service. I was just trying to play around to understand how these things work. It actually is a fairly straightforward, easy thing. The hardest thing is writing all the JavaScript to try to figure out to make it do what you want it to do. Setting up the data in an XML file is easy. It's the writing of the code that makes things. I mentioned, maybe I might show one more. By the way, these things are called mashups. This was when I played around with too for a while. The blue line around there two things I wanted to do here. I wanted to see if I can make the default the satellite overview, which I did. The blue line is the path I run at noon on most days. And then I wanted to do some other things. Like, for example, do you know what building that is there that's got the little red marker on it? If you don't, you could click on it. It's got Thompson Hall there. When I get some time to fool around with things, what I'd like to do is to take these 3D panoramas that I've made over a number of years on the campus and put markers around so that you could click on them and see the 3D panorama too. But I've got to figure out how to make make the Java applets work with the rest of this stuff. Don't have time to. Okay, so this I learned various things about longitude and latitude and the accuracy of maps and how coordinates are assigned to buildings and things. If you look at the map instead of the satellite image of this, you'll notice that the path doesn't go down the street anymore. The path runs through Hotel Your Hall. The difference is there's a slight offset between the map and the satellite image. And I don't know which one is accurate. Depending on which one you want to be your default, you've got to tinker with the coordinates by shifting a little bit. I have a thing on here that shows, there was a site came up a couple weeks ago called Google Map Mania. And this deals with various types of, I don't know, what's the hottest thing to do today? University of Waterloo student housing mashup. Oh, yeah, I've seen some like this before. What happens is that students that go to campuses that have to go and live around the campus, they want to know where the rooms are that they want to live. And so they've got these little maps that you can go to, and it shows you the rooms and who knows what else, the price and whatever. So those were some there's lots of applications here. This was just yesterday, huh? I don't know, whales and plate tectonics. There are things like, I've seen like pubs in a certain town in Great Britain giving the price of ale at these things. I mean, people have gotten very specialized. There was an interesting one, I'll probably never find it again, but it dealt with the earthquakes that happened within the last week. I didn't really realize that we have 25 or 30 earthquakes around the world every week. Some are big, those you hear about, but most of them are small. This deals with all of them that are above like 2.5. So someplace on here is a link to all of these things. There was one that caught my attention was they had one for the New York Marathon, which showed the different routes, and it also showed where all the portable toilets were being positioned and where the water things were. All the important thing a runner needs to really have their fingertips on when they... So there is just so many applications that have been created, and this place is a good site to whet your interest to find out what all these things are, or more examples of them. All right, so that basically the message here is that whenever you have anything where there's some geodata related to it, student housing, things like that, you can put it on a Google map, and it makes a good way to present the information, and it makes it kind of interactive. Now, that was the first idea that this last summer that I was interested in working out. The second dealt with things called RSS fees. Now, RSS stands for Really Simple Syndication. And the problem now that this was intended to deal with is the fact that there's a web overload. There's too much information. I have a number of news lists that I'm interested in, you know, New York Times, Washington Post, USA Today, and I can go down a number of others. And the problem is, if I sign up for the email, I get all these things and I have 100 email messages. And then you have to read through them, and if you don't jump in on it right away, you forget where it is and you've lost it. So unless you go to their website and look around. So the idea behind setting up these feeds is to allow people who are using their computer to be kept up to select the material they want to receive and to be able to go look at it whenever they want to, as opposed to when the person who's shoving it wants you to. I was interested in how to set up something like this because I had several things that I do Winter Home goes home. Yes, okay. The Citadel has one. So first of all, I want to show you how you actually implement something like this on your own computer, and then we'll talk about how you set it up. It is really simple. So I went to the Citadel because now you can look around, and sometimes you'll find little messages which identify that you can go to it there, or in this case, down at the bottom of the page. Now, people are really supposed to put these little tags. It either usually says RSS or XML, because actually behind this is an XML file. And you could click on one of those, and it goes to some page. But we'll do the click on page in a minute. The thing I want to point out is that if the developer is really good, they'll put one of these little orange icon. I'm not sure what that is. Looks almost like a sound thing. A little orange icon down there. So if you see something like that on a page, people have made it really simple for you to access it. All you do is you click on this, click, and it says, subscribe to Citadel RSS. Okay, and you click on that. And it pulls it up, and it just asks you, where do you want to put this? And it says, put it in bookmarks, or let me see. I want to put it on the toolbar up there. So, see, it popped up on my toolbar up there. I need a pointer there. Now, what does it show you? Well, if you click on that, this is the one that has got the last 10. The last 10 items that public relations, just clicked on one at random. So that's got that public relations stuff. So instead of having to read the news that's put in, I think it's the same as this kind of news things that appear here, although there it seems like they're out of date. This was the top one in that list. And so they haven't put this one into their list yet. It will be soon, probably. And in fact, my suggestion is, instead of having a lot of these things that they have to send out notices of all the time, once you just have those things available, so if someone wants to get the list of jobs that people are employed, or jobs that are available to be employed, instead of having to delete it from your mailbox every week, just put it so if somebody wants to see it, they could pull it down and look at it. Now, let's look at something a little more extensive. I think I have Yahoo News. Yahoo is a really good news source. Now you have to look around on these pages to find this feed. You'll notice down in the bottom lower right-hand corner here, there's that little orange thing. In fact, if I click on it, it probably lists all of the different items. Only two. Okay, top stories. I don't want that. I want to find the master list. So you have to look around for that little icon, which is down here someplace. There it is, because I've clicked on it before. news via RSS. Now, you see, you've got quite a few, so you don't want to get carried away. Otherwise, you're going to be just as bad as having your mailbox full. So, pick something you want, and now they have a slightly different. Well, I've never used My Yahoo. I think that's the same sort of thing, but for them. But here is the button that you want to. So, sometimes now you see. Notice at the bottom there's that little orange thing is not there. Sometimes people don't know how to put that little orange thing there. Or in this case, if they put it there, they'd have so many items to choose from that it doesn't make sense. So the way you add this, so let's talk about how you would add this feed to your desktop there. You click on XML, and it brings up an XML file. Well, okay. Now, we'll talk about how that file is put together, because this is what makes this feed work. But now, how do I get this onto my toolbar, where I have the Citadel there? Well, what you do is I'm used to using Firefox. To make something like this work, you need what's called an RSS aggregator. Or Firefox. Well, I know I'm using Firefox, but I mean there are other programs like this available that you can download and put on your system. In fact, the next version of Internet Explorer, they're going to have one of these things built in the way Firefox does. So then almost nobody was going to have to go out and download one of these. But these things include extra type of. The Firefox one is called Live Bookmarks, so it's not a full-fledged aggregator. So I have to find this. Well, it's under bookmarks. And you then select Manage Bookmarks and go to File, and it says a new live bookmark. So now you've got that same little box that popped up when I clicked on the Citadel thing, except you have to fill it in yourself. So I can give it a name, Yahoo Top News. And now, where's that XML file? What I want to do is to, it doesn't, you just cut and paste, or copy and paste, that XML file into this location where it says feed location, and say okay. Oh, but then of course it puts it up at the top of my list, and so you have to put it, if I want it down where what happened to my, oh, there's the Yahoo thing. Okay, I'll put it in between there. I'm having trouble getting, all right, come on, Yahoo. I want to make this book, oh, well, I'll just dump it into news. That's okay. All right, so there, now it should be in news. So if I click on news, see there, it's got the Yahoo Top News. And whenever I want to go to it, I can just put my mouse over there and it gives me the top stories. Now, these things can be updated as specified by whoever's setting them up. How does something like this work? Well, to start with, you have to have some content. You've got to have some pages. Or, as we will talk about in a few minutes, you may have to have music or something like that. All right, you've got to have your pages, and then all you do is you build an XML file that, that's going to give some information about these things so that the aggregator will know how to pop them up in that long list. And then, of course, you have to put a button someplace on your page so that people will know to subscribe. All right, that's like that little click on that XML button that went to that button that went to that little red orange button that went to this page here. Now, there's a lot of stuff in here that's completely optional. Of course, you have to start in. There's some code that's missing that says that this is an XML file, and then you say what version of RSS you're using, and then there's a big tag. The channel tag opens, and then it's way down at the bottom of this, but it's really large, so I don't want to go to the bottom. And then there's some mandatory things. The mandatory thing is the title and the link and description. The rest of this, the date of last build, language, all that stuff, copyright, all that's optional stuff. And the image is optional. The image is just something, if you have an image someplace and you want to click on it. So that's all optional. The most interesting tag, which is optional but is really useful, is this TTL, time to live. What that does is that if somebody has set up a subscription, what basically that does is it specifies how often the browser should go back and update the news. So Yahoo is updating their stuff every 5 minutes. I mean, if you're doing something, for example, supposing May decided that she would like to put homework assignments for one of her classes on the web and make it available. She could put these assignments on, and maybe she only puts one assignment up every day. So it would be, if a student would then subscribe to it, it would appear just like the list of this on their browser. And it would be only, you would have just check once a day. By the way, this is given in minutes. So if you do it, once every month, you got to figure out how many minutes in a month. Now, the key part to this, actually I had another file, but I might as well use this. The various items are the, there's the opening of the item tag, and someplace down the line, see, they got so much stuff in here, it's that's optional, it's hard to, okay. Well, yeah, it keeps on going. Oh, there's the closing of the item tag down there. I just sneak it in. There's the open of the item about the third line down, and here's the close of that. Now, the only thing that you have to have in here is either a title or description. The description can contain HTML, and basically that's like a short summary for the, but it doesn't appear when you like set up things with the Firefox. If you use some of these other aggregators, then you'll actually see the little summary. So if you're just using Firefox, it doesn't really matter if you see that or not. Again, the standard, now if you don't have a description with the links in it, then people aren't going to be able to click on anything. So if you put the title and a link, gives a link to the story. Basically, that's it. The GUID is basically a permanent link. So the purpose of that is that if you, or something like Yahoo, are having somebody come back and reading it every 5 minutes, you don't want them to have to load the same story over and over again every 5 minutes. So they will check and make sure that make sure it's a new link, and that's the purpose of the permalink or the GUID. The rest of this stuff, media content, a bunch of other stuff that's in there, is all optional. It's just, unless you're really getting into it, it's okay. Let's see. I was going. In fact, the thing I'm pulling down here, sort of my crib notes for the talk, is basically one of these feeds. All right, so this is actually the feed for the talk. And when I was making up the talk, every time I'd think, well, I better show that link, I just threw it into this XML file. And you see the links were linking to other places. Here was the item for the, well, let's see, I can't reach out. Well, okay, here was one of these Google Maps I didn't link to. The one dealt with Chicago crimes. Some enterprising person takes the crime statistics that are published daily by the people in Chicago that do that, and mashed it on top of a Google map, so you get a big map and you can see where every crime occurred and information about the crime and all kinds of stuff like that if you're into crime reports in Chicago. But this is all I had to do. I just had to give it a title. I give it a description so I'd know what it went to, and then I just gave the link. So it was sort of a quickie.
Where is the schema defined?
Ah, good point that I overlooked. There is a, you come up with something like RSS, and so it's got the specifications given along with tutorials and a whole bunch of other stuff here. So this is from xml.com/RSS. Now, this is fine. Now, how does this, what's a podcast and what does this relate to podcasts? Well, a podcast is the same thing as these RSS feeds, except it's audio. It's like the students who download music and play them on their iPod. I think that's where podcasts came from. The idea is that you want to deliver audio in the same way. You'd like to have a subscription service so that a person can automatically download the latest whatever. Now, this was set up as a companion to blogs. So blogs had audio components, interviews and things like this. And the idea is to do the same. And in fact, it's set up exactly the same way. You have content, but now your content is going to be an MP3 file. And so you need an XML file and a button that tells you where to subscribe, and you can set it up in the same way. In fact, I did some tests while I was doing this, and so here's what the of the XML file for the pod, my test looks like. Basically, you have an item here. Now, the item has to, I put in publication date, just so I could remember the difference here. You have to have a title and a link. The link goes to the MP3 file. But now here's the extra thing that you need. You need what's called an enclosure. An enclosure tag here. And that contains, again, the URL for the audio, together with the length in bytes, and together with specifying the type. And that's all that's needed. Now, to listen to these things, you need not an RSS aggregator, but you need something called an audio aggregator. No Firefox. Now, there's a lot of audio aggregators. The one that people had recommended is iPodder, which I've got set on this system here, but also iTunes. That's the Apple iTunes things. And if you use these programs, what you use these programs is to subscribe to one of these feed sites, and then what it will do is it will download the latest versions in the background, and then when you go in, then it depends. If you're doing it on your computer, like we have here, because I don't own an iPod, you just play it on a computer. If you have an iPod, then you can download it from the computer to the iPod. You'll have to have John tell you how to do that. I don't know how to do that. And then you can put the earphones on and walk around listening to it. So the idea is an idea of applications I've seen here. Deals with two just this fall. One is Purdue. Purdue is, they call theirs Boilerplate, Boilercast, or something like that. Hello. Boilercast. So these are all courses. And what happens here is that the course is recorded, the audio of it. And within 15 minutes, so they say, this is up on their site, where if a person has subscribed, it's downloaded to their computer, and then they can walk around campus listening to music or listening to the audio of the course or something like that. Now, I actually have downloaded one here from a physics course. I'm not going to have time to do it, but one of the arguments people say, students won't have to go to class. Forget it. Now, they're doing it here with classes of about 300 or more. So to start with, the people in the back row probably can't even see the instructor. But believe me, when you listen to somebody talking, I couldn't find any math ones here. But if you listen to a guy describing physics, unless you have the book in front of you or something, you're not going to understand a thing he's saying. I mean, it's... So now... Oh yes, that is true. Some people have said that about the math courses too. I'm sure. Now, like the other day when we were looking, there was a guy in Peter's class with the iPod connected, and I'm sure he was listening to an old version of that lecture. The other one that just about a week or so ago, Stanford announced that. That they were getting into this audio bit, but what they did is they're not putting it up so that normal people can subscribe to the way that Purdue did. They've got some sort of deal with Apple. They like Apple for some reason. Apple gives them a lot of money, and so I wanted to show you what this is. I got to read these little things up here. It should say, and now what they've done is they've taken faculty lectures and other important types of things. Now, see, I'm not sure this is good for a technical thing, but someone could give a, timed out. Oh, that's not good. Don't tell me. Stanford is not accessible here. I wanted to go to their, click on this, and if you have iTunes on the computer, launch applications, yes, okay, good. All right, I think I can, okay. It's going to come up in iTunes. iTunes will come up eventually here. It's down. Oh, that's probably because I had cannot connect to the music store. Unknown error. Ah, it's not the default. But I don't want the default. iTunes Music Store. Okay, so basically, what I did is I downloaded a couple of these here. It is trying to access the music store. The Stanford has a bunch of faculty lectures and some interesting, like there was one about why a baseball has stitches. I thought David would like that one, but we don't have time. It's an hour lecture, and so the time is about over here. But the idea of what you do, what Stanford does, is you go to their Apple iTunes store, and then you click on the various you get a list of things that are, I guess you choose them by categories, and then you get a list of the lectures that you would want to download to your machine, and then of course put on your iPod. They're I don't know what, so.
It's still just the audio.
It's still just the audio. I mean, these things are not, why do baseball have stitches? Okay, so that was the, and you have to learn how to use iTunes here in order to play these things. I'm thinking I might just be able to double click on it and it plays, it may not.
Click on the
top left.
Top left.
Right there.
Oh, the one that says play. Yes, okay. Yeah, well, okay, so anyway, I don't think we have time for this whole lecture on why baseball. Maybe it's down low or something. This was for some class reunion, homecoming 2005. So they have distinguished lectures and things like that. They also have courses set up so that for their courses, some courses, but that was not accessible. They keep that private. But you can't access that unless you happen to be at, I think I'm going to stop this here. So I'll stop and, one of the things I have a note to myself, things are progressing really rapidly. Last Thursday or Friday on the Chronicle Higher Education, it mentioned that a company called SparkNotes has now making available to students with iPods and iTunes an audio version of Cliff Notes. Those things that, well, they didn't have them when I was in college, but my daughter was in college, you know, those little yellow kind and black book that allows you to read Hamlet or whatever. So they've got these now audio, but it comes with text notes, which, and I don't know anything about an iPod, but apparently students can read these text hints and stuff along with listening to it. So things are, and pretty soon students are going to have the capability of making their own notes in there. Yeah?
I don't know if you all know Russ Pace, but he just took, he just purchased one of the latest iPods.
The video thing.
The video one, because he's
got a lot of money, I see.
Mac person.
Yeah. So yes, that's right. Yeah,
we're only one step away from doing the video here.
Yes, and by the way, the reason I'm wearing this microphone is because I hope that since I didn't bomb too bad, we'll be able to post it as a podcast off of our department site or my site. Okay.
Thank you.
A lot of information.